Frank Mir goes into holidays and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
Went on holiday last week.
What a week it was.
Only rained twice. Once for 3 days and once for four. Two little East End kids were paddling in the sea at South End.
Cool, said one. Look at your feet. They're not dirty. Well, yeah, we didn't have no holiday last year, did we?
said the businessman to his secretary. What a wonderful weekend we had in Brighton. Can you ever forget it? What's it worth? Asked the girl. Went to the seaside for holiday last year. Landlady said to me, our rates are £5 a night, bed and breakfast, or £4 if you make your own bed. All right, I said, I'll make the bed. And she gave me a saw, a hammer, and some nails. Two seagulls were flying over the beach at a seaside resort one boiling hot bank holiday afternoon, and every way they looked, there were so many people, there wasn't a speck of sand to be seen. Ah, said one seagull to the other contemptuously, takes all the skill out of it, doesn't it? A Scot from Aberdeen was on holiday in London, and every night he returned to his hotel full of the wonders of the city, so much so that another guest asked,
is this your first visit?
It is.
Oh, you seem to be having a great time.
I'm good.
That's...
And what's more, it's not just a holiday, you know, it's my honeymoon as well.
What?
Aye.
Then where's your wife?
Oh, she's been here before.
Holidays are there to be looked forward to. It's evidence of man's indomitable spirit, perpetual optimism or something. But no matter what disasters befall us on one holiday, we still look forward to the next. Of course, it's the contrast that does it. The thought of 2 weeks that are different keeps the average worker going for the other 50. William Shakespeare in Henry IV, Part 1.
If all the year were playing holidays, to sport would be as tedious as to work. But when they seldom come, they wished for come.
The same thought was confirmed by George Bernard Shaw.
A perpetual holiday is a good working definition of hell.
Since not many of us can entertain the possibility of a perpetual holiday, we keep our illusions about the few weeks that are possible. And these illusions are fostered by the holiday travel industry. The brochures seem to promise not only the beauties of nature, gastronomic wonders of the world, sporting facilities unrivaled by Olympic stadia, but also the solution of all personal problems and the finding of perfect romance. Merely for the cost of postage, our doormat fills with glossy portraits of paradise, and the daydreams they stimulate are often more fun than the actual holiday. It's a very exciting moment when the brochures arrive.
Oh, holidays? Oh, good. We're going on holidays, are we? Yeah, I've been meaning to talk to you about that. Time's getting on, you have to book up early. What's all them other dresses? They're holidays as well?
Yeah, come on, have a look. Don't mind me, but I'm in mine.
They're all holidays, aren't they? Oh, good.
They're my holiday brooches. I've sent away for them.
Interesting. Hey, what's this? Greece? Italy, Spain. But we always go to Bognor.
Yeah, I thought we'd have a change this year.
We've always been to Bognor.
Well, it's about time we stopped going to Bognor, isn't it?
Well, what have you got against Bognor?
I've got nothing against Bognor. It's a nice place. I just don't want to go to Bognor this year.
It's lovely there. The Hotham Park, Pets Corner. I bet there's nothing like this in these places. Yeah. Hey, what's this? Greece. Hey. Hey, look at it. It's falling to bits.
That happens to be the Acropolis.
The what?
The Acropolis. Haven't you never heard of it? That's famous, that is. The Four Horsemen of the Acropolis.
Steptoe and Son, Wilfred Bramble and Harry H. Corbett. Details of package tours always seem to be couched in superlatives, but the more sedate brochures of old-fashioned hotels are often sources of unintentional humour. Here are some. Here's one quoted from the Daily Express.
Guests' dogs are charged a shilling or 1 and 6 per day according to size and social standing.
There's a more sporty one.
An additional attraction is fishing for guests, both game and course.
Here's another.
A stimulating start to the day is given by our enormous traditional breakfast served in the dining room or by a chambermaid in your bedroom.
And finally,
late dinners are a regular feature of our service.
It's a difficult business writing brochures and reading them. A lot of people prefer the personal contact. They arrange their holidays through a travel agent.
So I went to this travel agency. What's this place in Mile End Road? Never again. I wouldn't go there. Mile End Road. And there was this woman. I went in. There was this woman sat there behind the counter. Oh, poor soul. She was fat. Oh, she was fat. Oh, she was, oh, huge. I mean, every time she breathed, everything quivered, you know. You know. So I said, excuse me, I said, could I see your brochures? So she said, I beg your pardon? I said, your brochures, your tours. She said, you're not touring over my brochures. She said, I thought we'd got a right one here for a start. I said, look, I'm on a holiday. I'm come for a holiday, a nice cheap holiday. She said, oh. She said, well, have you tried potholing? So I said, well, I thought it sounds vulgar enough for me. So I thought, no, the weather. No, I don't think it's me. Well, she said, why not try a boat on the Broads? I thought, I'd rather try some Broads on a boat. But then, listen, anyway. No, I'm sorry. No, that's neither here nor there. So anyway. She said, here. She said, would you care for a cruise? She said, I've got a good cruise. Well, she said, I haven't got a good cruise. But she said, I know the captain of a trawler. The skipper of a trawler. And she said, I know him. He's a very good friend of mine. You see, I thought, hello, hello, yes. I thought myself, you know, I thought myself, hello, there's one here knows her way round the bay. And not home in time for tea either. But so, anyway. She said, look, I can do you a nice 10-guinea cruise. So I thought, that's cheap, see? So I said, right. It's me, it's it, you're on. So I went in this trawler, sharing a cabin with half a ton of coke. And there I was, yes, 10 guineas, I thought it's worth it for 10 guineas. No, this is it. Where was our first port of call, may I ask? Where was our first port of call? Tokyo. Tokyo. I could tell it wasn't Rotherhithe as soon as we stepped ashore. I thought, it's not Rotherhithe for a start. That's a lovely place, Tokyo. Like a sort of inscrutable Tunbridge Wells. And I've no digs, you see. So I went to this rickshaw driver. So he took me to this tea house. It was called the Tea House of the Seven Dragons. And this woman opened the door. She was one of them, obviously. Sloppy cat. Sloppy cat. It was the middle of the afternoon. There she was, dressed in this dressing gown and slippers, halfway down the afternoon. I said, I'm sorry, Mrs. I said, if I've woken you up from your kip. Oh, she said, no. Oh, she said, no, this is traditional dress. This is kimono. So she showed me to my room, a lovely room. It was a low three-piece suite, two rush mats and a cushion. So she said, you pay me week in advance. She said to me, would you like geisha now? So I said, well. I said, if you've got the kettle on, I said.
Frankie Howard, 10 guineas to Tokyo isn't a bad rate, is it? Even when that was recorded, perhaps the war was still on. The difficulty with going a really long way on holiday is adjusting to the customs and manners of the country in which you arrive. It's fortunate that there are books available to instruct the traveller. Here's some advice from Baedeker's Guide to the Mediterranean, published in 1911.
Intercourse with Orientals.
That's a good start.
The objects and pleasures of travel are so unintelligible to most Orientals that they are apt to regard the European traveller as a lunatic, or at all events, a Croesus, and therefore to be exploited on every possible occasion. Hence their constant demands for bakshish, a gift. To check this demoralising cupidity, the traveller should never give bakshish except for services rendered, unless occasionally to aged or crippled beggars.
Here's another useful tip from the 1902 version of Baedeker's Egypt.
The traveller in Cairo and Alexandria should keep his eye on the direction taken by the cab, as sometimes the cabman drives straight ahead in complete ignorance of the way and requires to be guided by being touched with a stick on the right or left arm according to the turning.
I must try that on a London cabbie. As leisure and incomes increase, more and more of the world is being colonised for holidaymakers by the big tour operators. I wonder what the bosses of these concerns are like.
Mr. Scarfield, if I came to you and told you that I had 6 weeks' holiday and only £12 to spend, could you tell me where to go?
Yes, sir, I could. But I should not be so rude. No. Instead, sir, I will refer you to my brochure, Scuttle's Holidays at Popular Prices.
Well, could you give us an example of one of these popular-priced holidays?
Certainly, sir. Here we are. 3 fun-filled days in sunny Clacton. 96 guineas.
96 guineas? But that's not a popular price.
I like it, sir. But, of course, sir, that is off-season, end of November. But we do have the more luxurious holidays, sir. Here's one very luxurious on the island of Nagula. In the Pacific Ocean, sir. It's got everything. It has sand for the children, sun for the wife, sharks for the wife's mother. It's a real fun spot, sir, and you can watch the Ula Ula girls with their grass skirts on, rotating their crops. Oh, they're full of fun, the Hula Hula girls are, sir, and they're very friendly, if you know what I mean.
I see, yes. Well, what's the best time to go there?
Any time, sir, between 21 and 45. But I mean, sir, who wants to stay in England when they can go to a place like Nagula? I mean, here in England, you wake up in the morning, sir, it's pouring with rain. You open the window, listen to the birds coughing, sir. But in Nagula, it's sunshine every day, sir. And the natives, there they are in the open air, sir, sitting round, eating their national dish.
And what's that?
It's what they call poi.
Oh, yes, poi. Yeah. I've heard of that.
Yeah, and you can have any kind you like, sir.
You mean there's more than one kind of poi?
Oh, there's all sorts of poi, sir, yes. Apple poi. Steak and kidney poi, sir.
Benny Hill with Peter Vernon. When thinking of holidays, a holiday by the seaside in Britain is still very popular. Well, it certainly is in jokes. Most comedians at one time or another have done their stint in summer season at the end of a pier. And it's not just variety shows that you find on the pier.
Now let's meet someone who earns his living from the seaside holidaymakers, a remarkable old character. The man who looks after the amusements at the end of the pier. Good evening to you, sir.
Good evening to you, sir. Good evening.
Thank you. Now, would you mind... Would you mind... Would you tell us your age?
No. Not... not at all. I'm 85.
85 years old. Well, that's remarkable. And yes. How long have you been on the pier?
I've never touched a drop. Wouldn't have the leverage.
No. No, sir. On the pier.
Yes. Ah, 65 years I've been in the amusement arcade. I look after the penny peep shows. You know, what the butler saw and naughty nights in Paris.
Oh, yes. Do you ever watch them yourself?
Yes, I sometimes have a peep. But it brings tears to me eyes. It's all very sad.
Yeah, but I've seen those peep shows often. They're not really sad.
They are when you're 85.
Kenneth Williams and Kenneth Horne. Another popular source of seaside holiday humour is the seaside postcard, complete with enormous busty ladies, little weedy men wearing braces and knotted handkerchiefs on their head, and dubious goings-on in bathing huts. Unfortunately, these aren't very good for radio because you can't see the pictures and the captions are mostly unrepeatable. But the type of seaside humour that can be broadcast is the landlady joke. There are lots of these, there are millions of them, but all with the same central figure. The dragon of a landlady who runs her guest house like a prison camp with hundreds of impossible rules. Alfred, can we have a few choice specimens?
A man was being shown round the guest house by the landlady. This is your room. Any complaints? Well, the window's a bit small. Wouldn't be much use in an emergency. There won't be an emergency. My terms are cut in advance. Excuse me, said the guest, but this steak is so tough I can't even cut it. Take it away and bring me another. I can't take it away, said the landlady. You've bent it. A holidaymaker was complaining to his landlady about his room. Look, this wall's so thin you can almost see through it. That's not a wall, it's the window. A man arrived at his holiday guest house and met the landlady. "Can you sing?" she snapped. "No," he replied. "Well, you better learn quickly. There's no lock on the loo."
With such delights at home, it's amazing that people want to travel overseas at all. Well, certainly a lot of eminent men have tried to discourage them over the years. Here's Thomas Nash writing in the 16th century.
"Countrymen, tell me what is the occasion of thy straying so far out of England to visit this strange nation? If it be languages, thou mayest learn them at home. Naught but lasciviousness is to be learnt here."
G.K. Chesterton.
"It's a pity that people travel in foreign countries. It narrows their minds so much."
King George V.
"I hate abroad."
And a typically crushing line from Dr. Johnson.
"A blade of grass is always a blade of grass, whether in one country or another."
Yet in spite of all these arguments, the foreign trip still has a great attraction. I wonder what it is. Back to the brochures.
Let's see. This lot needs sorting out. Costa Brava? How spine. South of France. Italy. And Greece. Well, I've never heard anybody chatting about the Greek birds, so they can't be up the match. Here, Spanish birds is all right. You can't get near them without their mums. I could take him with and pair off. No, it's not worth it. So, that leaves Italy and Saint-Tropez. Well, the Italian birds are bigger. But they don't wear nothing in Saint-Tropez. Oh, yes. Saint-Tropez, I think. You can size it all up at a glance. Besides, I've only got a fortnight. I can't afford to muck about.
Harry H. Corbett. It is, however, possible to go abroad without being submerged by beastly foreign habits and having to eat unspeakable foreign food. Here's a letter from the Leicester Mercury.
"We went to France for our holidays and took 6 large sliced loaves of bread with us. We still had one left after 13 days. It was still good to eat. This is a tribute to a Leicester bakery."
But food isn't the only problem on foreign holidays. An anecdote from Frances Trollope, the mother of the novelist Anthony Trollope.
"I remember being much amused last year when landing at Calais at the answer made by an old traveller to a novice who was making his first voyage. 'What a dreadful smell,' said the uninitiated stranger, enveloping his nose in his pocket handkerchief. 'It is the smell of the continent, sir,' replied the man of experience. And so it was."
So it still is. If you travel abroad, you have to decide what form of transport to take. Is it worth going by car and filling in all the forms and things that that entails, and vying with all those mad foreign drivers? An extract from the Irish Press.
"As an experiment in night traffic control, the white-cloaked traffic policeman at the Place de l'Alma in Paris is now being floodlit to ensure that night drivers will not miss him in the dark."
Perhaps it's better to travel by plane, though that has its drawbacks. Michael Flanders.
"As the airlines say nowadays, you know, flying is very, very safe. It is actually, we can calculate it is safer to fly than it is to cross the road. Mind you, I gave that up years ago where I live, in Kensington, near the air terminal. They have these airline buses whizzing about, you know. I think the drivers have instructions to keep the statistics favourable." "Companies do anything to put you at your ease, whether it is our own BO Airways Corporation or Air Linctus or any of those, right from the moment when they send you your ticket, often as much as 6 hours before you're due to leave. And it says on it that you are entitled to 20 kilos of free baggage," which is a wonderful international ring about it, kilos, you know. You'd always get down your log rules and slide tables and find out that this is in fact about 44 pounds, give or take an Oz. I always like to weigh everything before I go, and I on my scales. They only weigh up to 10 pounds. They're marked in scruples. But I weigh everything, including the cases, and it usually comes to about 40 pounds. Put the things into the cases, £50. Can you explain? It's the only example where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Off to the airport, and you know you're nearly there because you see this big notice saying, "Beware low-flying aircraft." There's not a lot you can do about that. Take your hat off. Then you go into the lounge and you sit down, and the man comes up and tells you that you are on the advanced flight, which sounds marvelous, till you find out it means you've got to wait for another 4 hours. There's always a good reason for this. Either the plane has been held up in Beirut by some band of marauding riffs, or there's a wind over the Atlantic, something they haven't quite tumbled to yet. What they do on the Air Ministry roof, I do not know. Or else it's untraced electrical fault, which means they can't find the radio operator. You sit there, you go on waiting there, you know, if you haven't had smallpox, and filling in your landing card next door to this big machine saying, "Insure your life for £250, you know, loss of both limbs, half price," like, until finally you hear a voice through the loudspeaker saying, "Well, if after it's said that after it is tomorrow." So you do that. It's all aboard the mystery bus tour, and off we go to the middle of the field. They're very helpful about this, because I have a particular problem about this, you know, getting up this very steep gangway with the wheelchairs on. So they're very nice, they're very helpful. They find out exactly which gangway is nearest to my seat. Then they take me up the other one. Actually, do them justice, last time they took me up through the kitchen entrance on a forklift. That is stately, you know, like this. Why they need a great machine like that just to lift forks, I... They're only made of plastic, aren't they? Well, you go in and you find your seat and you sit down and you stop smoking and you fasten your safety belt. And you take your hand baggage out of the hand baggage rack and put it on the floor. They're very particular about this. And then a very nice lady comes and tells you what to do when you come down in the water. And what to do when you stop breathing. And finally, it's time to go, and it chocks away, and they start up the engines, you know, and the whole plane starts to shake, like this. It's like a cat after a pigeon, you know. But I'm never worried, because I know that every tiny part of this great machine is a miracle of modern engineering. Then the ashtray falls off. Oh.
Michael Flanders' beautiful piece on flying. When one is abroad, it is essential to behave well and never to forget that one is British. A word of advice from Manners for Women, written by Mrs. C. E. Humphrey in 1897.
It ought to be part of our patriotic feeling to endeavour to convey as agreeable an idea as possible of ourselves to those countries which we honour with our distinguished presence in our little trips.
Absolutely. Dignity is important. One must never forget G.K. Chesterton's distinction between a traveller and a tripper.
The traveller sees what he sees, the tripper sees what he's come to see.
Unfortunately, many of us can only afford to be trippers. And on a lot of holiday tours, they are driven not by their own interests, but the order of their courier.
Sit down, 18. Sit down, sit, sit. It's your last warning, 18, next time I strap you in. Like 8 hours in a coach and you're hysterical. What are you going to be like in 3 days? Pull yourself together, man. You've only seen 5 capitals. You've got another 18 to go. Right, wake up, 12, wake up. Now, in 20 minutes, we will be leaving Italy and entering Switzerland, which is a different country. So finish your spaghetti, throw the cans out of the window, and put the primer stoves back under your seats. You may now open your souvenir plastic bags marked not to be opened till Italy. You'll find a small green plastic replica of the Tower of Pisa. Don't try and stand it up. It's made that way. Now, in half a minute, we'll be crossing the border. You don't need your passports here. We've got a special arrangement. They just stamp the coach. We're in Switzerland. Now, Switzerland is famous for its mountains, cheese, clocks, and chocolate. Nothing else. Open your plastic bags marked Switzerland and you'll find a small piece of chocolate. Eat it up quickly, we're not here long, it's a small country. Right, now wake up, 12, wake up. There's another capital coming up in a moment. I warned you all before. If you miss a capital, you do the whole tour again. Now, Bern, B-E-R-N-E, Bern is coming up on the right-hand side of the coach in a moment. Sorry, it's getting a bit dark. Shine your torches out of the window. There it is, over there. Right, tick, Burn. Now, Burn is the sixth. You missed that, didn't you, Nine? What do you mean you can't find a chocolate nine? No excuses, you missed a capital. Right, that's number nine, Thompson. You'll do the tour again. Stop screaming. Stop screaming. Hold him up somewhat. Never mind, he's fainted. All right, we'll have an emergency stop here. Please stop. Everyone out, 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 out. In. Everybody back in. You were last, 22. You'll watch the coach. Right. We're off again right now. The midnight bathe in the crystal clear waters of the Swiss Lake, as referred to in the brochure. The coach will be passing through the lake in 30 seconds. Get your swimming costumes on now. Open the doors, driver. This is where I leave you. There's another courier waiting for you on the other side of the lake. Breathe in when I say breathe in. Breathe in. Good luck. Goodbye. No drowning.
John Cleese from, sorry, I'll read that again. And that brings our investigation of the humour of holidays to an end. So from Alfred Marks and me, au revoir.
Au revoir.
Au revoir. Hasta la vista. Ciao.
Frank Muir Goes Into Holidays was produced by Simon Brett and Bob Oliver Rogers.